You know, it's approaching Thanksgiving time, and it's a time when we reflect back to our forefathers and what went before. And I heard the reason I guess happened upon this message is I heard the director of the E.G. White Estate speaking on 3ABN, and he was telling some stories, and I had no idea I was going to relate any of it to you folk, or I would have taken some notes. But I want to tell you one story that he told, just from memory, which my memory's not real great. But he told a story of the General Conference session was meeting in Detroit, Michigan, and this would have been sometime around 1920-1930 era. And the workers had come out from Maryland to the meeting, and on the way back to Maryland, Ellen White, I believe it was her grandson, was on a train along with the General Conference president. Well, I'm not sure that they knew they were both on the train together, but apparently Mr. White had gotten a berth in a sleeping car, and he'd taken the lower level, or the upper level, because that was cheaper. And I can understand why. It's harder to climb in, the train bouncing back and forth, so the upper levels were cheaper. And he felt pretty good that he was saving money for the cause. Now, back in that era, the work was referred to as the cause. Everything, much personal sacrifice was given to the cause. This was the mindset. So he felt pretty smug about the fact that he had gotten himself an upper berth on the train ride back to Maryland. And so he decides to go for a little walk back through the train and before he goes to bed. And he gets back to the coach car there, and there's this General Conference president. And this man's in his mid-70s, and he's got the seat back as far as it'll go, and he's got a blanket over him, and he walks through the car, and the General Conference president looks up, and they make eye contact and kind of nod their head, you know, because they've been together this past week. And he goes down around, and then he ends up turning around and going back to his car, to his sleeping car. And he said that he was never more humiliated and humbled and embarrassed in his life as that, because the General Conference president didn't know what was going on in his mind, but he was feeling pretty good about what he'd done about taking this upper berth. So I suppose a little pride that I've done something good here. And then he goes back and sees the sacrifice this elderly gentleman was making, just sleeping in the coach car. That's just one story of thousands and thousands of stories of the history of our church. That's just one little excerpt. And today I'm going to tell several stories, and I have some slides I'll show here just in a little bit. But I want to start out with a little quote, a little part of Patriarchs and Prophets, 187 and page 188, not all of that, but just, the Christian should often review his past life and recall with gratitude precious deliverances. Now, I'm not talking about past life that you had before you were born. I'm talking about our past, that God has wrought for him, supporting him in trial, opening ways before him when all seemed dark and forbidding, refreshing him when ready to faint. He should recognize all of them as evidence of the watch care of the heavenly angels. In view of these innumerable blessings, he should often ask with subdued and grateful heart, and this is from Psalms 116, verse 12, David asked, what shall I render unto the Lord for all his benefits towards me? Well, here's her answer to her question. What shall we render? Our time, our talents, our property should be sacredly devoted to him who has given us these blessings in trust. Whenever a special deliverance is wrought in our behalf or new and unexpected favors are granted us, we should acknowledge God's goodness. Not only by expressing our gratitude in words, but like Jacob from our scripture reading, by gifts and offerings to his cause. As we are continually receiving the blessings of God, so are we to be continually giving. This is from Genesis 28:22. Of all that thou shalt give me, Jacob asked, I will surely give a tenth unto thee. This was our scripture this morning. She poses another question. Shall we who enjoy the full light and privileges of the gospel be content to give less to God than was given to those who lived in former, less favorable dispensations? No. As the blessings we are enjoyed are greater, are not our obligations correspondingly increased? But how small the estimate, how vain the endeavor to measure with mathematical rule time, money, and love against a love so immeasurable and a gift so of such inconceivable worth. Tithes for Christ? O meager pittance, shameful recompense for all that which costs so much. From the cross of Calvary, Christ calls for an unreserved consecration. All that we have, all that we are, should be devoted to God. That's from Patriarchs and Prophets. Now, I wanted to share that with you because this last Wednesday in 1891, Mrs. White left for Australia. So, us personally, have we ever had a difficult time figuring out what God wanted us to do? God opens the door. Are we willing to step in faith through that door? Sometimes it's not always easy. Well, on November 12th in 1891, Ellen White set sail for Australia, and this has been the subject of considerable debate as to exactly why Sister White was sent to Australia. And she herself was befuddled when she heard of the General Conference leader's desire to send her there. Now, bear in mind, she was 64 years old at this time, and she lived in Battle Creek. And I don't know how you feel at age 64. At 66, I wouldn't feel like taking off to a foreign land. I'm sure that the trip was at least a month on a sailing schooner, halfway around the world, leaving her family. It's not like getting on a jet plane and flying over there. And it's a long jet ride, let alone getting on a sailing schooner. And I'm sure that she had in her mind that when she left, there'd be people that will die while I'm gone and could be members of my family. I don't know. I mean, you know, it's a lot to ask of a 64-year-old woman, wouldn't you think? Okay. She had a vision in 1871 about missions to the continent. And she expressed that at a general conference session, and the takeaway was the angel said Australia. Now, Stephen Haskell acted on this directory. This was kind of his idea to do this. He was there when she said that and spoke that in 1874. So now at 1891, it's time to send her to Australia. This set in motion a plan for Adventist work to begin in the South Pacific. But Sister White was surprised when at the 1891 General Conference session it was voted, and I'll read you how it was voted, that whereas in our judgment it would be a great blessing to the cause in Australia and adjacent colonies for Sister White to visit that field. Therefore, resolved that we hereby invite her to do so as soon as the coming autumn, if her own judgment and the light she may have in the matter shall be in accordance with this request. It being understood that W.C. White shall accompany her on this visit. Now, what followed this resolution was a time of heart searching for the 60-year-old church co-founder, who grappled with the committee's decision to send her off to Australia. I'm sure she was puzzled. She's 64. There was a lot of other younger people that would have been happy to have gone. So why send an old 64-year-old woman out there to Australia? Here's what she wrote in her diary as the time approached for her to go. This morning my mind is anxious and troubled in regard to my duty. Can it be the will of God that I go to Australia? This involves a great deal with me. I have not special light to leave America for this far-off country. Nevertheless, if I knew it was the voice of God, I would go. But I cannot understand this matter. She wrote that in August. So, years later, she was there almost 9 years. Years later, she wrote to the then General Conference President, Ole Olson, and this is what she said. I have not, I think, revealed the entire workings that led me here to Australia. Perhaps you may never fully understand the matter. The Lord was not in our leaving America. He did not reveal that it was His will that I should leave Battle Creek. The Lord did not plan this, but He let you all move after your own imaginings. That's a rebuke, I would think. The Lord would have had W.C. White, his mother, and her workers remain in America. It was not the Lord who devised this matter. I could not get one ray of light to leave America. Nevertheless, Sister White submitted to the General Conference decision. Now, again, I've said she's 64. She also knew the importance of working with the church, the Bride of Christ, even though she didn't have special light to go to Australia. And sometimes our church leaders make decisions that we may not exactly agree with, but nevertheless, God works through the church. And she left and went to Australia at age 64 to this far-off country. Now, Australia was not like it is today. A month or more of travel, left family and friends, might not see him again, church family and friends. But after she arrived, this was her mindset. I am in Australia, and I believe that I am just where the Lord wants me to be. She was willing to take this situation and do the Lord's work, because she's there, so it must be the Lord's will, because she is there. He may not have told her to go, but she's there. Because suffering is my portion, I have no thought of beating a retreat. Now, isn't that interesting? I have not seen any pictures. Now, maybe you have, especially some of you who have been born in the faith. Pictures of her laughing with big smile on her face. Pretty straightforward in most photographs. Now, I realize that a lot of photographs, a person had to hold still because they had a slow shutter time and the film speed was slow. But she says, because suffering is my portion, I have no thought of beating a retreat. That's from Selected Messages, Volume 2, page 239. Her almost 9 years down under turned out to be fruitful. The work was established there, a college was begun, fine leaders were trained, and many souls were won to Christ. Now, let me see if I can get this going here. Maybe. Okay. This, And I realize people on the radio can't see this. I'm going to show some slides now, so I'll give a little bit of a description. This is an old black and white photograph, circa 1890, Avondale College, Missionary College. This is near Sydney. It is a kind of a remote area with some sparse white buildings in the picture, but you can see that this was pretty much bare land. And the things that I'll show you here now, a lot of this took place while she was over there in that period of time. This is another picture of the college and as it was then. You see some farm buildings and some dormitory type buildings. This is the ladies' hall that was built. I don't see a date on this, but this is all part of the Adventist Missionary College. This is a sanitarium in Adelaide, which is not near Avondale Missionary College. It's about 1,000 miles south, I think, from Sydney. More in the middle of the country. 1908. That's a class of 1898. And she went over there in 1891, I think I said, right? So that's 7 years later, and this is the class, graduating class. This is an administration building in Avondale. Now, I didn't know where this was, so I looked it up on Google Earth, and Avondale College is from the, you're all familiar with the clamshell there in Sydney Harbor, you know the building I'm talking about? It's about 10.5 miles as a crow flies northwest of there. I had no clue where it was. This is conference workers in 1891, and you can see Mrs. White right there. The other people, I don't know who they are. But I thought that was interesting. I don't believe there was any, and you might know more than me, there was any Adventist presence in Australia before she got there. I don't believe that was the case. And this, I just threw this in because this is in Elmshaven in California, north of San Francisco. This, when she came back, she didn't know where she was going to live, had no clue what was going to happen as far as what the Lord wanted her to do. But this house was made available, and she was able to purchase this house. And I can't think of the name of the college. It's right up the hill. But I got to visit that house. I've been in that house, and I don't know if any of you have ever been there before, but it's it left an impression on me. She is up there in the porch. You see her up there? That's the last picture, I believe, that was taken of her before she died. She fell in the hallway going into her parlor where she wrote, and she tripped on a rug and fell and broke her hip. And then several months later, she died. So I'm going to leave that for just a little bit. She had a change of attitude when she got back. After she returned to the United States, she wrote of her time in Australia. When I left Australia, I really thought I might be back in 2 years. But I may never see Australia again, though. If it were the Lord's will, it is the place where I should most prefer to be. Isn't that amazing? She would like to go back. I wonder what the change was. I wonder why. She goes on to say, I am closely joined to that field by the most tender associations. I love the brethren and the sisters there. And were I younger in years, I would certainly return to the field I love so well. That was in a letter in 1902, June 1902. Now, in Australia, just a few things. They had the Avondale Mission College, and that is a complex now with a big hospital and medical area and a campus, and it's just a, it's kind of like Loma Linda, Sydney. They had sanitariums, established the health food message, missions in the Pacific Ocean in Tasmania and New Zealand and other places. They also had a times, signs of the times that they printed over there. So there was quite a change, but the Lord blessed her work. Now, as to why she went, I've heard that some of the church leadership at the time wanted her out of the way because she was trying to keep the church on the straight and narrow, and I think more liberal views as time passed, and they weren't as conservative, I guess, and they just felt that they could run things better without her. So they sent her off to this halfway around the world, 64-year-old woman, in 1891. That's like sending you to the moon. But she came back, and she settled in Elmshaven. And down here, right down in there, right behind that tree, is where she did most of her writings. She had a lap board and sat in a rocking chair in there and wrote most of her writings. And this room right up here, right behind that porch, it was her bedroom. And the college there, there would be many nights when the students would be up there to college and could look down and see, and there would be a glow in that bedroom. The lights would come out of it, and they knew that that Mrs. White was being visited by an angel. I have been in that bedroom, and it does make you think. It's a humbling experience. I want to share another story with you. Pastor Eric Calvin Ward was born in 1924. And November 11th, this was this past week, November 11th in 1924 he was born. This was in honor of what would have been his 90th birthday. This is an excerpt from an article written on him that will provide background to this photograph. One of Ward's largest baptisms occurred in Wilmington, North Carolina in 1954. During one of the most difficult meetings he'd ever conducted, at a critical point in a crusade, his infant son, Nathan Gabriel, died. Now, he's given this evangelistic series, and his son dies right in the middle of it. Some would say, why'd you do that, Lord? Well, God didn't do that. That's Satan's work. Together, he and his wife tearfully paused to bury their son at noon. Then that evening, Ward went back to the pulpit, preaching through pain a gospel of resurrection hope through Jesus Christ. At the conclusion of the meeting, he baptized 306 souls. Pretty successful meeting. And was not discouraged. Brokenhearted, sad, but not discouraged. Ward evangelized and pastored for over a half a century, fulfilling the church's dual responsibility of winning souls and then keeping them in the fold. So you can see that these are just little snippets of stories. And you know, in a couple of weeks, we're going to be celebrating Thanksgiving, and we'll be, some of us will think about the heritage of this country and how blessed we are in this country. As a church, we're blessed. Most of us are all, well, all of us, I guess, are the product of the Lord's interest in us and the hard work of those pioneers that went before us to establish this church. And they did a lot of work in a short period of time, and they sacrificed everything they had They didn't have two cars in the garage and worry about where they're going out to eat supper that in the evening. They didn't just stop at a tenth. They gave everything they owned for the cause. And the church multiplied rapidly. Now, you know, we never know how the Lord's going to lead us. But I wanted to share this story with you. It has nothing to do with the church, but it's an interesting story about how God can work in our lives. Perhaps you've heard this story before. It's a story that Jim Lovell, the Apollo 7 and Apollo 13 astronaut, he told this story, wrote it in his book, Getting Home. A television reporter once asked him if he was ever scared. And Jim said, "Oh, well, I've had an engine flame out a few times in an aircraft and was kind of curious as to what was going on and if it would light up again, things of that nature. But they seemed to work out." Television reporter, "Is there a specific instance in an airplane emergency when you can ever recall fear?" Jim, "Oh, well, I tell you, I remember this one time. I'm in a Banshee at night in combat conditions. So there's no running lights on the carrier. It was the USS Shangri-La, and we were in the Sea of Japan." That was the Korean War. "And my radar had jammed, and my homing signal was gone because somebody in Japan was actually using the same frequency." Not yet. "And so it was leading me away from where I was supposed to be." So he's out in the middle of the ocean, can't find the aircraft carrier. "I'm looking down at a big black ocean. So I flipped on my map light and then suddenly zap. Everything shorts out right there in the cockpit. All my instruments are gone. My lights are gone. I can't even tell you what my altitude is. I know I'm running out of fuel. I'm thinking about ditching in the ocean. And I look down there, and then in the darkness, there's this green trail. It's long like a carpet that's just laid out right beneath me. It was the algae. It was that phosphorescent stuff that gets churned up in the wake of a big ship. And it was just leading me home. You know, if my cockpit's light hadn't shorted out, there was no way I'd ever been able to have seen that. So you never know what events are going to transpire to get you home." So I thought that was an interesting story, and we never know what events are going to transpire to get us home. We have to have faith in the Lord that He leads us in the right direction, and we have to follow the Lamb wherever He leads. Thank you.